Chapter 2. Mark minus 116.50.32. Aeneid Thiel, ultramarine, marked for discipline and censure, boards the blue and gold Stormbird on a landing strip 2,000 kilometres south of Numinous City. The sun, which is a star named Viridia, is a dot of pearl in the pale sky. A beautiful star, Thiel has heard it said. A beautiful star, and a fine world. Before him, the Dera Carron lowlands, the district of manufactories and assembly halls, matte metal in the sunlight. The buildings clean, simple, and utilitarian, wisp white vapours into the clear sky through rotating roof vents and cycle chimneys. Areas of forest have been preserved between the finishing concourses where the labour force can rest and mingle between shifts. In the west, just a cloudy ghost low in the sky, one of the orbital shipyards has just risen like a moon. Thiel knows of 8 others. Soon, Calth will rival McCragg's manufacturing output, perhaps in 2 or 3 decades. There is already talk of a projected superorbital plate, like Terra. Terra has superorbital plates. The master worlds of the Imperium have plates. Calth will join McCragg, Sadamanth, Conor, Occluder, and Ajax as one of the master worlds of the Ultramar sector, and between them they will govern a vast swathe of the Ultima Segmentum. Calth will be one of the anchor points of the coming civilization. Calth is an embodiment of the rewards that centuries of warfare have been leading to. For this reason, Calth must not fall. For its status as part of the Dominion of Ultramar, it must not fall. For its shipbuilding capacity in its forge world, it must not fall. Intelligence has been received from Horus. A theoretical has been identified. It must be a great deal more than a theoretical, Thiel believes, for mustering and conjunction to have been taken this far, unless the new Warmaster is anxious to prove his authority. To mobilize the 13th, the largest of all the legions, in an essentially singular war effort, that takes balls. To tell Reboot Gilliman, the Primarch with the least to prove, how to do his duty, that takes balls of adamantium. To suggest that Gilliman might need help. Horus is a great man. Thiel is not ashamed to admit that. Thiel has seen him, served with him, admired him. His selection as Warmaster makes reasonable sense. It was only going to be one of 3 or perhaps 4, no matter how other Primarchs might deceive themselves. To be the Emperor's avatar? His proxy? Only Horus, Gilliman, Sanguinius, perhaps Dawn. Any other claims for viability were delusional. Even narrowed down to 4, Dawn was too draconian and Sanguinius too ethereal. It was only ever going to be Horus or Gilliman. Horus always had the passion and the charisma. Gilliman was more clinical, considered. Perhaps that tipped it. So did perhaps the fact that Gilliman already had responsibilities. An empire, half-built. Ultramar. Administration. Populations. A culture. Gilliman had already evolved beyond the status of warlord, where Horus was still a killer of worlds and a subjugator of adversaries. Maybe Warmaster Horus is aware of this disparity, that even in his triumphant election he has been outstripped by a brother who does not even want for the honour of Warmaster anymore. Perhaps that is why Horus needs to exercise his authority and give orders to the 13th. Perhaps that is why he is conjoining them with the 17th, a legion they have never been comfortable with. Or perhaps the new Warmaster is rather more creative than that and sees this as a chance for Lorgar's rabble to borrow a little gloss from Gilliman's glory by association and example. Aeneid Thiel, ultramarine, has said these thoughts out loud. They are not the reason he is marked for discipline and censure. Mark minus 111.02.36. They're loading munition crates at the docks on the south shore of the Boros River. Numinous City faces them across the wide grey water. The work is hard, but the men, Imperial Army every one, are laughing. After the loading, a meal break, a last drink, then lifters to orbit. The crates are scuffed metal, like small coffins, full of local pattern las rifles, the Illuminator 6, a refined variant pressed out at Viridia Forge. The men hope to be using them within a fortnight. The wind blows in along the estuary, bringing scents of the sea and the coastal dredgers. The men are all from the Numenous 61st, regular infantry. Some are veterans of the Great Crusade. Others are new recruits, inducted for the emergency. Sergeant Hellock keeps the spirits up.
Will it be greenskins? Will it be the greenskins?
The rookies keep asking. They have heard about greenskins. He assures them it will not.
It's an exercise in cooperation, Hellock says. It's an operational show of force. This is Ultramar flexing its muscles. This is the War Master flexing his muscles.
Hellock is lying to them. He lights a low stick and smokes it under the shade of a tail boom, the collar of his dark blue field tunic pulled open to let the sweat on his collarbones dry. Hellock is on good terms with his captain, and Hellock's captain confides in him. Hellock's captain has a friend in the Ultramarines 9th Company, part of the encouraged fraternization. His captain's transhuman friend says that the threat is not theoretical. He calls it a likely excursion of the Gazlak Xenohold, which is a shit-stupid way of describing it. Busted greens, busted orcs, busted bastards, gathering at the sector edge, working up the courage to come and ransack Kalth. Not friggin' theoretical at all. That's why you take the whole busted 13th and the whole busted 17th and all the army units you can scare up, and you throw them at the Gazlak busted Xeno-busted hold, thank you so very much. You drive a bastard system-killing compliance force through their precious Xeno-hold and put them down dead before they put you down, and you kill their barbarian empire at the same time. Just kill it. Dead. Gone. Bye-bye. Clap the dust off your hands. No more threat. Theoretical or bastard otherwise. You take a compliance force, the scale of which hasn't been seen since Ulanor or the early days of the Great Crusade, two full legions of the Emperor's finest, and you pile-drive it through the septic green heart and rancid green brain and green friggin' spinal cord of a Gazlak Xenohold, and you end them. This is how Sergeant Hellock sees it. Sergeant Hellock's forename is Bo. None of the men in his command know this, and only one or two who survive will learn it later when they read his name on the casualty lists. Bo Hellock will be dead in 2 days' time. It will not be an orc that kills him. Mark minus 111.05.12. Sergeant Hellock has gone for a smoke. The men slow the pace. Their arms are aching. Bale Rain is the youngest of them. He is absolutely raw, a week out of accelerated muster. There's been a vague promise he'll get an hour to say goodbye to his bride of 6 weeks before he lifts that evening. He cannot bear the idea of not seeing her. He is beginning to suspect it was an empty promise. Neve's on the other side of the river, waiting for him on a public wharf, waiting for him to wave from the ferry rail. He can barely stand the idea that she will be disappointed. She will wait there all night in the hope that he's only late. It will get dark. The refinery burn pipes will glitter yellow reflections off the Black River. She will be cold. The thought of this hurts his heart.
"Pull your collar up,"
Crank tells him, clipping his ear. Crank is an older man, a veteran.
"Work in the sun," he scolds. "It'll burn you, boy. Cap on, collar up, even if you sweat. You don't want skin burn, trust me. Worse than a broken heart."
Mark, unspecified. The mark of Kalth means two things. First, it refers, as per 13th Legion combat record protocol, to the elapsed time count in Terran hours, sidereal, of the combat. All Ultramarines' operations and actions of this period may be archivally accessed for study and their elapsed time count mark used as a navigation guide. An instructor might refer a novitiate to Aurax Mark 12.16.10, meaning the 10th second of the 16th minute of the 12th hour of the Aurax compliance record. Usually, this count begins at either the issuing of the operation order or the actual operational start. But at Kalth, it is timed from the moment Gilliman ordered return of fire. Everything before that, he says, wasn't a battle. It was merely treachery. Secondly, the mark of Kalth refers to the solar radiation burns suffered by many of the combatants, principally the human, specifically non-transhuman, troops. The last of these veterans to die, many years later, still refuse graft repair and wear the mark proudly.